We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the news quiz. We start with a customer review of a car wash in Torquay, read by Zeb Soans.
Not impressed. Terrible service. It took 2 hours and 30 minutes to wash my car with a screaming toddler.
Our thanks to James Hood for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Really welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Susan Kalman. And opposite them on my left, Vicky Pepperdine and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, who's told the media to check their facts?
Well, we all learnt a lot this week, didn't we? We learnt that Jeremy Corbyn spent much of the 1960s, 70s and 80s stabbing people with poison umbrellas. which was basically what certain newspapers would like us to believe. And this is founded on the allegations of a supposed top communist spy. Well, I'm not sure he can be, because back then all the top communist spies were working inside MI6. So I don't see how that's possible. And certainly his credentials as a spy master are less than impressive, given that his idea of an intelligence asset was Jeremy Corbyn. But anyway, I mean, I'm perfectly prepared to believe that there might have been meetings, and I can't begin to imagine how exciting those conversations must have been. So, Comrade Corbyn, have you got any interesting information for me? Well, yes, I have, actually. One of Ken Livingstone's newts has died. And yesterday, I very nearly accidentally bought an orange that was from South Africa. I mean, yes, it is. Of course, it is perfectly conceivable that Jeremy Corbyn would have met with this character. I mean, Jeremy was of the left, and I'm sure he probably met with pretty much anyone who gave the professed view that they wanted to bring down capitalism, because he was a really avowedly committed socialist. I mean, for God's sake, he took a camping holiday in East Germany with Diane Abbott. That is how committed a socialist he was. But I suppose the key question is, why are all these allegations about things that happened several decades ago, if they happened at all, why are they coming out now? And the answer is, of course, that there's a bit of panic in the press, in the right-wing press, about the possibility of a Labour government. But I can't help feeling that the papers, they might have peaked with their scaremongering a little too soon, because fundamentally they've suggested that Corbyn is a spy and a traitor. They haven't really left themselves anywhere to go now. I mean, I'm sure they'll find somewhere to go, but they haven't really given themselves much wriggle room. But it will get uglier.
Maybe he'll turn out to have been involved in the Hatton Garden robbery.
But wasn't he... didn't he have an alibi anyway, Corbyn, on one of the meetings when he was alleged to have been meeting this guy that he was actually in Chesterfield?
Yes. That's what I read. Absolute hotbed.
But that has a crooked spire.
I love the idea that they went to Jeremy Corbyn specifically to find out information about Margaret Thatcher, the least likely person he would spend any time with. They may as well have asked Arthur Scargill. But I do think it opens up possibilities for young voters. I can see Jeremy Corbyn kind of being a James Bond figure, you know, coming out of the sea with a dripping wet cardigan.
Wasn't he supposed to have said what Thatcher had for breakfast?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
This suggests not only that he was a spy, but that the Tories' most popular ever leader was having an affair with Jeremy Corbyn. How else would you know what someone has for breakfast?
Well, you could guess. It's either toast, eggs or
That's
cereal.
Rubbish spying, though, guessing, though, isn't it? I reckon the nuclear codes are 1 and 8.
So do you give it much credence, Jeremy?
Not very much. I am slightly biased because I've known Corbyn for about getting on for 30 years, and one time I met him at some occasion, he reached into his pocket and said, "Here, Jeremy," and he passed me something. I thought, "Oh, is it microfilm? Is it something to do with Trident?" It was 5 daffodil bulbs.
Yeah, but what was inside the daffodil bulb?
It's a sign, isn't it?
They were
plants. If you've known Jeremy Corbyn... if if you've known Jeremy Corbyn for that long, there's a possibility that you, Jeremy Hardy, are also a spy for communist Russia and have been bumbling along with your persona of gentle comedy guru when actually you're some form of Rosa Klebb-style assassin.
Let me just say, Miss Kalman, this is an unexpected pleasure.
This is the suggestion that during the 1980s, Jeremy Corbyn was a spy for the Czech Secret Service. The claims have been made by former spy Jan Sarkozy, who says Corbyn was a paid informant, feeding them state secrets like where the toner cartridges for the House of Commons photocopier were kept, where to stand on Parliament Square to keep your placard out of the wind. Corbyn's not the first left-wing leader to face this sort of smear. Michael Foot was falsely accused of working for the KGB, while Tony Blair was once linked with the Labour Party. Apparently, Corbyn kept the Russians informed about what Margaret Thatcher had for breakfast, which is ridiculous. They could have worked that out simply by inspecting the bones in her droppings. Mr. Sarkozy also claimed he knew what Margaret Thatcher was going to wear every day, which is impressive given her reputation as a famously unpredictable fashion maverick. I'm sure we all remember when she announced the sinking of the Belgrano in assless chaps and a piano key tie. 2 points to Andy. Susan, who's retreated to plan the next advance?
Oh, yes, this is actually a really good news story, I think. Just to explain, I have the past 8 months, I've not read a newspaper at all. I've kept out of everything, and I was really pleased to be back, you know, talking about topical things, just to see how things have really moved on in the year since I was last on the news quiz. And, you know, I was worried we might have stagnated, but, you know, we've all been clamouring for clarity about what's going to happen after Brexit. And we finally got an answer, and I, for one, am delighted, because David Davis has categorically stated that after Brexit, Britain will not be plunged into a Mad Max-style world borrowed from dystopian fiction. Because I don't know if you've seen the Mad Max films, but Tina Turner's always singing and Mel Gibson's got his top off, and that's not a world I want to live in. Also clarified, and I think, again, let's look on the positives here, that a Brexit deal by the end of 2018 is well on the cards. So just calm down. So David Davis, I think, really reassuring the public that there may well be something happening at some point. Everyone just calm your jets. And they all went away to Chequers for a chat, like a beautiful Agatha Christie novel. And then there were none, to have a chat about what might happen in the future. Nothing's come out of it yet, but be assured that something may or may not happen. And what my summary of the Brexit situation after being away from this for a year is, very simply, some people are not happy, and most people are unhappy. And that's Brexit, as far as I can see.
I like David Davis. I just find him engaging. Watching him trying to be Brexit secretary, it's just like watching a puppy driving a bin lorry. It's really entertaining. You know it's not going to end well, but for a few seconds, it's a whole lot of fun.
It's just so bizarre, isn't it, that the most sort of positive thing he could come up with was, it's not going to be as horrific as Mad Max. You think, you know, but OK, so give us an example of what it is going to be like, you know, something a bit brighter, like, I don't know, Sleepless in Seattle, or... I don't know.
Well, that's to be nice.
Really bad amateur production of Pirates of Penzance.
Just say, like, the sort of thing you sound when you're maybe driving a large family on an away trip. That sounds the sort of thing you would say behind the wheel when you've absolutely lost it. This is not going to be a disaster. Will you all stop? Let me park. This is all... Daddy needs silence for park. This is not going to be a disaster. Can everyone stop saying it's going to be a disaster? We are going to enjoy Warwick Castle. As soon as we've parked...
We used to go on holiday and essentially my mother would make us swim in the North Sea and she would always take a photograph and you'd be going blue because it's essentially the North Sea and she'd shout, smile! It looks like you're not having fun! That's Brexit.
That is it.
My parents were sensible enough to know how cold our coastal waters are, and that's why I had to wear knitted trunks made of wool by my nan. My crutch was full of krill for most of my childhood.
Sounds like a very lyrical novel, My Crutch Was Full of Krill.
The Jeremy Hardy story.
I would read that. I mean, but it's apparently got quite bad-tempered at Chequers. I mean, there's still a lot of internal ructions going on. And she got this... Theresa May was delivered another letter from the Jacob Rees-Mogg crew. And
is that their official sort of gangster name? They write it, don't they? They graffiti that on the bridges.
Yeah. She's constrained, I know, because the majority is fragile. But, I mean, realistically, the DUP are not going to ally with Jacob Rees-Mogg because he named all his children after popes. But there's a terrible moment of reckoning coming for Jacob Rees-Mogg. Probably about 20 years from now, I reckon, he's going to wake up in the middle of the night and all his now adult children are going to be gathered around his bed and they'll all be holding a blunt instrument. Because, I mean, at some point, it's going to kick in, the anger, isn't it? Seriously.
What, you mean the stupid name anger?
Yeah, the stupid name anger. They're going to be thinking...
Oh,
you had a different version of murdering Jacob Rees-Mogg.
So all his children were maybe sort of vehement Remainers or something like that.
I wasn't being clear. They can probably clarify that.
We don't mind you calling for him to be murdered. We just want to know why.
I was just suggesting in an amusing way that the children might murder him in his sleep.
I think we're all fine with that.
Yes,
that's
fine.
Yeah,
super.
This is Theresa May's war cabinet to decide once and for all the government Brexit strategy, which is taking place right now as we record this programme. The meeting is to take place at Chequers and involves 10 senior cabinet members, all of whom have been asked to bring a bottle, a board game and a set of their own utterly immovable prejudices. We're told we're unlikely to get a clear statement any time soon, and thank goodness, there is nothing worse than it all being over too quickly. I, for one, am continuing to enjoy exploring the delayed gratification that only a tantric Brexit can bring. While we don't know all the details of this cabinet away day, I think it's safe to assume that at some point on the bus there, Theresa May had to be moved to the front because she was feeling travel sick. Boris Johnson ate his entire packed lunch before they set off. And a weepy Philip Hammond was forced to change... I can't go. And a weepy Philip Hammond was forced to change into his in-case-of-accident tracksuit bottoms. It is, after all, a terribly exciting time. 2 points to Susan. Vicky, who's studying the cost of studying?
Yeah, so this is about tuition fees and the Education Secretary, Damien Hines, looking into ways of either freezing them or possibly cutting them a bit, but no one's really clear. And he's basically looking at three different criteria, which are the value of the course, how much the course costs to put on. I think that's the first thing. Second thing is how much value it is to the student doing the course. And then the third thing he's looking at is what benefit is that for Queen and country, or something like that. What benefit it gives to our economy. That's what it was. So they're looking at whether courses are worth paying £9,250 a year for, or not, basically. But it's maths. It's really difficult maths, and it's about paying back £300 million when you've borrowed 10.
But what the argument seems to be is, well, people should pay, because if you go to university, then you will earn more in the future. But if you earn more, you're going to pay more in tax anyway. And I couldn't tell you what part of my income is due to my 2-1 in modern history and politics from the University of Southampton. I'd have to ring all the provincial arts centres that I work in and they'd say, I think it's probably more to do with ticket sales on balance.
It's a difficult one. And if I could take this opportunity to thank my mum and dad for paying for my law degree, because it's really helping me now. And the thing is, do you know what's wrong with this country right now? This is what's wrong with this country. Do you know one of the things I remember most in my life, Miles, is there used to be a programme on ITV called You Bet.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah, Matthew Kelly.
And members of the public would come on and bet that they could do something, and it was never something normal at all. It was always something weird. And I loved it because it's what's great about us. So there was one man who said he could identify the type of 1900s lawnmower from the sound of the wheels. That's the kind of country we want to live in.
Super. What would you do, Andy, if you were on New Britain?
Oh, I don't know. I'm quite good at recognising people by their ball patches.
What, do you carry a ladder with you or something? How has this come about?
Why are you laughing at that?
I'm just wondering how this has come to be the case.
They have to be going down the stairs.
This is the government's review of higher education funding. Theresa May expects the review is to take an entire year, confirming the widely held suspicion that in 12 months' time for her, this will all be a distant memory as she suns those milky knees on a beach in Mykonos. The Prime Minister has ruled out using any more Treasury funds to ease the burden on students. The government's advice to young people who are worried about getting into financial difficulties is to change your name by deed poll to Virgin Trains East Coast. Watch the money flood in. 2 points to Vicky. Jeremy, who wants to arm teachers with more than knowledge?
Well... Donald Trump has chosen this moment to moot the idea of teachers being given firearms. Now, it's easy to snap to instant judgment, and obviously, overwhelmingly, most British teachers are thinking, yeah, can we? My year eights are a nightmare. If we take the inspector hostage, do we get a good Ofsted? That would be the instant reaction. But what he's saying is, he doesn't mean all teachers should have guns. I mean, that would be daft. What he's saying about 20%. About 20%, and he says the ones who are firearms trained, perhaps somebody who was in the military, still gets flashbacks, but it's sort of stable. Somebody who was a police officer who took early retirement over a death in custody. is now basketball coach. And he says this would be a deterrent. I could understand the argument. And I don't want to sort of sneer at people who've been bereaved and saying anything that might save a child's life. Yeah, if the teachers were armed and they were able to shoot the shooter, that would stop him killing more. That is true. It is true. But Trump is talking about a deterrent, that it would deter shooters. I don't think they're really making rational risk assessments, these people. I don't think somebody who is considering a shooting spree is sort of weighing up the pros and cons and thinking, well, I mean, I suppose I'd get life imprisonment anyway or get shot by a cop, but being shot by a teacher would be so embarrassing. Do you know what? The more I think about this massacre, I'm not sure it's a good idea. And, of course, a lot of these people have been in contact with the far right. They're members of sort of weird supremacist groups. They've been radicalised online. There is the issue of mental health, which Trump has raised, that there are sometimes warning signals that somebody has mental health problems, the unnecessary use of capitals in tweets. But it's a very messy, complex thing, and there is no easy answer to it, other than the idea that guns are generally not very good, because they really only do one thing.
There are gun laws in America. I mean, there are regulations. I mean, as I understand it, the way it works is someone walks into a gun shop and they say, I would like to buy 22 machine guns, please. And the person behind the counter says, are you mentally ill? And they say, no, and neither is my invisible giraffe. And then they sell them the guns. And that's... So he's going to tighten that up a bit.
Yeah. My mum was a teacher and I wouldn't give her a gun. I mean, she loses her mind if they change the time country files on.
This is Donald Trump's alarming suggestion that an effective way to combat gun violence in schools is not to get rid of guns, but instead to have more of them and give them to teachers. Trump has linked shooting to mental health issues, pointing out that if you have serious psychological problems, you'll be far more likely to suggest giving guns to teachers. I'm no expert, but I'm fairly sure we should avoid arming people who are apparently enraged by the sight of someone turning up without a blazer. I mean, this may not be the most powerful argument against it, but it's going to lead to an awful lot of false starts on Sports Day. At present, the only weapon available to the teacher is the barbed comment designed to do permanent damage to the pupil's self-esteem. But look at me now, Mr. Jenkins! I mean, you were right, but look at me now. 2 points to Jeremy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Susan have 4, and so too do Vicky and Jeremy. Yeah. We start round two with an online advert for a company called Somovo.
Why not apply to become a sperm donor with us? Takes just 2 minutes.
Thanks to Alexander Galley for sending us that. Andy, who aspires to faster speeds?
A deal has been struck between the government and the church, whereby the church get to rent out their spires, transmitters on them, to increase broadband penetration in rural areas, I think, which is fine. Although using religious premises for commercial gain, didn't Jesus have a bit of a thing about that? or am I confusing him with Melanie Phillips? I'm not sure. But anyway, it is a government mantra at the moment, increasing broadband coverage in rural areas. And, you know, clearly they feel that politically it is very important that farmers can access porn more quickly. I don't have any strong sort of view on it. I mean, I think it's fine for the church to make a little bit of money on the side. I mean, when you think about it, there's quite a few commercial possibilities in a church. I mean, fonts are very underused, aren't they? I mean, 6 days out of 7, they're idle, and you could rent that. I mean, fundamentally, it's a basin, isn't it? Or a bidet for a very tall person. And cloisters, you know, like you see those nice cloisters in cathedrals and stuff. You could line some nuns up in those and have a novelty bowling alley. You could hire out.
What would the nuns be? The pins?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, thanks for explaining it, though.
I didn't immediately understand what you were talking about.
No, I know. I'm getting that a lot nowadays. You could hire out very small choir boys. You could market those as Christmas tree decorations. What's the matter with you, sir? Why did you tense up there when I started?
That was a laugh of pure relief, Andy.
There's all sorts.
The church commissioners are ruthless. They're always... The churches get turned into flats. They turn the graves into luxury basement apartments.
Coffee shops.
With sitting tenant.
I'd worry I was being judged if my broadband provider was the Church of England. I mean, yes. I don't watch anything... but...
No.
But...
Susan, you're not being judged by anyone. Just tell us what it is that you want.
You know, I stayed at...
you can be completely calm about it.
They can be quite judgy. I stayed in a religious hotel accidentally.
That's called a cathedral.
It was beside...
Incredibly hard beds.
It was beside a cathedral. And I tried to log on to a few websites and I couldn't. Because they'd banned them. And I would just worry that that's what would happen all the time. And I'm not doing anything I'm ashamed of.
I think they're not... It's not like they would be the actual internet provider.
I know,
they would just, provide a high thing that you could nail a satellite
dish to. As an overarching principle, that they would always be watching.
Oh, they're always watching, Susan.
You know.
They've always been watching, Susan.
You get higher speeds if you're sort of devout.
So it's just a way of, sort of luring people in.
Yeah, I am the way, I am the Wi-Fi. There you go, see, that's their tagline.
I don't think the C of E is the right one, though, because it does require... I mean, the internet is magic, basically, isn't it? I mean, if you've got a wired connection, that makes sense. But, I mean, wireless is... You have to believe in a supernatural force that controls the world... And I don't think the C of E is really on board with that. A dear friend of mine is an Anglican parson in East Anglia. I shall not name him. And we got drunk a few Christmases ago, and he said, Jeremy, I've been in the Church of England for 40 years, and I don't know anyone who believes in God.
This is the news that church spires could be used to boost broadband signal in rural areas after a deal was struck between the government and the Church of England. To those in the countryside who haven't seen any of the internet so far, it's basically filth, but at one point a dog chased some deer. It's hoped that making Wi-Fi available will give teenagers another reason to go to church other than to dry hump each other in the graveyard. I just read what it says. I don't endorse it. I certainly don't condemn it.
Can I just say, all of the views expressed on this programme are the views of the BBC.
Yes, absolutely.
Repurposing church spires is great news for people in rural areas who are now free to go back to using mobile phone masts for ritual human sacrifice. Anyway, good news for the church. The roof is going to mend itself in no time once the vicar starts mining Bitcoin. 2 points to Andy. Susan, have a listen to this. Chick, 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 chicken. Lay a little egg for me. Chick, 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 chicken. I want one for my tea. I haven't had an egg since lunchtime. Now it's only 3:30. So chick, 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 chicken. Lay a little egg for me. Oh, that was our song, wasn't it, Susan? Susan, who has a paltry excuse for closing their doors?
Finally, I have to say a story that genuinely matters to the nation. The whole basis of this is that Kentucky Fried Chicken changed their distributors and they have run out of chicken. There's a shortage of chicken, which is bad because it is Kentucky Fried Chicken. It is therefore their raison d'etre, if you will. And I'm not going to be patronising, actually, about Kentucky Fried Chicken. There's been quite a lot of people kind of sneering at people who like Kentucky Fried Chicken. I have, on many an occasion, enjoyed a boneless banquet for one in my car. And I'm not allowed to go to Kentucky Fried Chicken because my wife doesn't agree with it, and so I have to sneak off and have a boneless banquet for one in the car. And I have to sit with the windows open so she can't smell it. And then I have to have a shower afterwards so she doesn't know I've eaten it. I'm essentially having an affair with a box of chicken.
Do you go to KFC often, Andy?
Well, when I was young, I'd go to all the junk food. Not all consecutively, you know. Yeah.
That was a full day for me.
I used to go to the Wimpy Bar in Herne Hill with my friend Guy.
Watch the hangings.
I was watching the Vox Pops. It did expose a rather worrying lack of knowledge about maybe where fresh meat comes from. There were quite a few people who seemed to be under the... They were very angry, and they seemed to be under the impression... One said, it's called Kentucky Fried Chicken. They must have chicken, as if he imagined they got a basement full of chicken. Or that they can just go out back and shake some chickens out of their chicken tree.
What I get is loads of Kentucky Fried Chicken shops have closed and people have become very upset about it because they like KFC. The point of this, and this is why this is important in light of what we've been talking about on the show already, is that some customers have quite rightly called for Theresa May to have a Cobra meeting about this because... It's serious. But what I'm saying is it's a plea, really, to the government to put aside your differences and help the British public get some chicken. Because I was driving through London today and I didn't see a single other chicken shop. There's hundreds of them. What's the problem? Yeah.
But that's the issue, though, isn't it? A lot of them are franchises, KFC.
Absolutely.
I mean, for instance, if things go wrong with a rail franchise... We renationalise it, right? And is it not time, perhaps, this is what we did with all Kentucky Fried Chicken outlets?
I mean, as I understand it, their big problem is that it was a logistics thing. They switched their supplier to DHL, and I think DHL are having problems stuffing the chickens into the envelopes.
Is it recorded? Does someone have to sign for it?
That's
might
right.
Be the problem.
And in the wait, they can peck their way out of the jiffy bag and everything.
I ordered a Kentucky Fried Omelette and that actually arrived very quickly, which sort of answered that age-old question.
This is the crisis, and it's not too strong a word, that has hit KFC after a switch in delivery providers caused a chronic shortage of chicken and the temporary closure of around 600 outlets. Chaos at the delivery depot in Rugby has led to entire lorry loads of food being scrapped. It's such a shame that so many chickens will now not fulfil their destiny of being thrown on the pavement during a fight between two drunk 14-year-olds about loom bands. Because of the delivery issues, KFC had introduced a new vegan menu of 11 herbs and spices simply flung directly into your face. I've been known to pop in from time to time, order a cocoa batter, and, the lemon wipes are delicious. Still, if you're desperate to eat all your meals from a bucket, why not try being abducted? Points to Susan. Vicky, who's quaking in the valleys?
Well, yes, so this is about an earthquake in Wales, in Swansea, which I'm calling a rumble in the mumbles. Sorry. So this is about an earthquake that took place in a place called Crumicleth.
Have we got that a cloth for the front row, please?
And it was apparently 4.4 on the Richter scale, which is quite big. And so the residents were pretty shocked. And it's these sort of big events, isn't it, when you get drawn into sort of human stories, because apparently Clive Phillips, who's 78 and a member of the community council, said he did not feel a thing. Despite living at the epicentre of the quake. And he added, apparently we had a tremor in the village in 2008, but I didn't feel anything then either. And then Mr. Phillips' daughter, who lives in the next door house, said the dog went ballistic and it was ill afterwards. So some pretty big things were happening in Swansea that day. And Swansea's one of the most seismically active parts of Britain, apparently.
I didn't realise that at all.
Oh, yes.
Britain is seismically very active.
Yeah.
But they're teeny, because the mantle of the Earth is so thick, because our geology is so old, I think we barely feel them, because by the time they reach the surface, the shockwave is... Also, we make less fuss.
It's just our sort of self-deprecating thing. That'll be my wobble back again. Just that balance thing. I always seem to fall over when all the plates fall off the shelves.
I like to think of it as the awakening of a massive Welsh Godzilla, and that it'll appear soon. It was the rumblings of the end of the world in a Mad Max-style dystopia. That Brexit isn't what gets us, it'll be Godzilla coming from Swansea.
This is the earthquake that hit Wales at the weekend, although it was felt as far away as England and is thus important. The quake measured 4.4 on the Richter scale, which is described as light, some visible shaking of buildings and objects. You might end up discussing it with your neighbours. Probably not worth bringing up on national radio. The earthquake caused shock and confusion in the local area, with many people running out of the house shouting, "Will someone please call Jones the seismologist?" Louise Craig from Connors Quay said, "It was the most excitement I've had on a Saturday afternoon in a while." There is a cry for help if ever I heard one. There were no accidents or fatalities, although there were reports of a number of people who'd been trapped in Wales by a series of falling house prices. 2 points. Jeremy, who's got their kit off at a send-off?
Oh, this is really odd. In China, there is a new fashion for spicing up your funeral by hiring strippers. Now, I don't want to in any way insult people who work as strippers, because if you suggest that it's degrading, a lot of people will say, no, the women are in control of it, just as many people locked in a sex dungeon find it, you know, very liberating. But I don't think it's the sort of thing that would catch on at British funerals. I mean, aside from the whole politics, the sexual politics of stripping, I don't know. I mean, I suppose we could have pole dancing at funerals. We have a large and vibrant Polish community. They might want to bring some of their traditional folk dance. Lap dancing is very popular, despite the fact the lap community is tiny and spends most of its time helping Santa. But I suppose our funerals are dull. And what we did when my dad died, we did the whole funeral ourselves, because we thought we do not want it ruined by people that will mess it up. because when my mum died, I'd said, let's get a vicar, because they know this stuff, vicars, priests, rabbis, they know how to do this stuff. And my dad, who used to be high church, was Anglo-Catholic, said, oh, no, he's a scientist, he's a belligerent atheist now. He said, no, 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 over my dead body. I said, over your dead body, you're getting the bloody Archbishop of Canterbury, if you like it or not. But we settled upon a humanist. So a man came to the house. I shall call him Malcolm, because that was his name. He was a humanist, and he interviewed us. He made some notes. He went away. He wrote a script, which wasn't very good, but we changed it all. And then we turned up at the crematorium thinking, it'll all be fine. We've got a humanist. He'll be grand. And he'd made a weird suit, Malcolm the Humanist. He obviously thought, well, undertakers wear tails. I'll wear tails, but I'll have it light grey, which made it a bit wedding-y. It was a bit Vegas wedding chapel funeral style. And it was a sort of drape coat as well, with a brocade thing and a bootlace tie. So it was borderline shawaddy waddy. It was really odd. And when we'd met him, he spoke completely normally. But he obviously thought of this as a performance. He had a funereal voice. And he said, today, we're mourning the passing of Sheila. And I thought, oh, my God, he's a CBeebies humanist. We somehow booked the Justin Fletcher of death. So that's why, when my dad died, we just did it ourselves. It was fine. And we didn't have any strippers. We had ice sculptures. Oh, but they melted because it was a crematorium. So that was a mistake. We released some doves, but they were all killed because we fired above the coffin. We just improvised.
Strange, isn't it, though, that they decided the mourners sort of need to be entertained, clearly. Mm. This is the sort of thing. Apparently they can hire comedians, actors, strippers, or there was one other. I can't remember what the other one was. Can you remember what it was?
Lecturers.
Yeah, university lecturers. And I did think, when I saw this in article, I think in The Telegraph, really very tedious article, and I thought, you know, I can't remember sitting through either of my parents' funeral thinking, come on, this is so boring. When's this going to bloody end? You know, I wish we had something else to look at instead of this boring old coffin and some vicar at the front. Get on some dancing girls. Got to clap seals with balls on their noses. Let's get something going here, guys, because I'm dying.
What I think they were trying to say was, in China, they put a huge amount of kudos in how many people come to your funeral. Mm. So they're trying to attract people to the funeral by saying, there'll be a stripper. Like a stag night, they go, there's going to be a stripper. And everyone goes, well, I'm coming.
Oh, it's actually, culturally, it is good luck to have lots of mourners at your funeral.
Well, it's a bit late.
Exactly. I don't quite understand the concept of it's good luck to have lots of mourners at your funeral. I mean, yes. Unless it's good luck for the caterers. But
disaster for the catering. The last thing you want is a load of people turning up. You can never, if anyone's got a funeral planned, you can never overestimate how many sandwiches you will need. Because every old bastard in the county will know there's a free feed on, and they will. It's like Night of the Living Dead. People lurching towards you with sausage rolls in their eyes.
This is the Chinese government's crackdown, if you'll pardon the term, on the practice of hiring strippers to perform at funerals. For some people, tucking a £20 note into a G-string is the only way they can process their grief.
What if you haven't got cash? Can you swipe with your card?
Swipe with whatever comes to hand, Jenny. Everyone knows about the five stages of grief, but we often forget about the all-important sixth stage, staring at tits. If you ask me, people should stick to the traditional method of drawing a large crowd to your funeral, a lifetime of dropping hints about a massive fortune and a playful will involving a series of riddles. Anyway, it wouldn't work in this country. People don't like it if you so much as get your arse out at a baptism. 2 points to Germany. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Andy?
Robert Mitchell in Benfleet saw this on a label for some salt. Himalayan pink salt, the 250 million year old salt. Best before December 2018.
Susan?
This is from Charles King of Croydon. Instructions on an underarm deodorant label, take off cap and push up bottom.
tricky.
This is from an article about a man called Tony Fowler, who's a milkman who's helped his community and was recently honoured. And it says, Tony has an MBE for services to the community, which he collected from the Queen dressed up as a Frisian cow.
Jeremy.
OK, Miles, this was sent in by Chris Chappell, who says that he taught at Farnham Grammar School, where I went, and it says, Surrey admits bollards mistake. Surrey County Council is under pressure to replace a row of unsightly bollards outside Farnham Library. The council has admitted its mistake and is now discussing replacing the bollards with local councillors.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Susan have 8, and so too do Vicky and Jeremy. Before we leave you, here is something heard on Radio 4's PM programme in an interview with a sign language interpreter sent in by Bob Steeper.
Me, personally, I've interpreted on stage for some big stars, such as Adele and Ed Sheeran. I also just did a tour for Steps, who actually have a huge deaf following.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Susan Carman, Vicky Pepperdine and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Zep Soames. The chair script was written by Sarah Campbell, James Keppel and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Simon Alcock and Laura Major. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.